Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Rainbow Warrior with yours truly, Sally Edwards. Today, I'm delighted to be interviewing a wonderful individual and also a very wonderful personal friend, Susan Douglas Scott. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Sally. How are you doing?
I'm really well, thank you. It's so nice to speak to you. It's been too long.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? But then COVID hasn't exactly helped.
No, it's been difficult, hasn't it?
It has.
So, for the benefit of my listeners, I've got some a little piece of information here which lists some of the highlights of your career. So, forgive me for indulging in this because I think people need to hear this because it's pretty impressive. So, and apologies if it embarrasses you, but it will be over in a second. So, Susan spent 18 years in local authorities and non-government organisations in the field of disability and health, including the CEO of FACE Scotland, CEO of Epilepsy Scotland, and then the first CEO of the Health and Social Care Alliance. In 2016, Susan was honoured to receive the LGBTQI Icon Award in recognition of a career-long commitment to equality for all. She is chairperson of the Independent Living Funds Scotland and the NHS Golden Jubilee Board and has been awarded CBE in the Queen's New Year's Honours List in 2019. For the past 8 years, Susan has a career as a freelance consultant in inequalities, health, disability and social care as a non-executive director of NHS Education for Scotland and the chair of the Independent Living Scotland Fund and as a popular humanist celebrant. In 2018, she was also announced as chair of the Golden Jubilee, a national NHS board. In her personal life, Susan and her partner Jerry were the first lesbian couple to have a legal marriage ceremony in Scotland on the 31st of December 2014, having campaigned for equality for many years. Wow. That's quite a CV. How does that feel?
It's showing my great age, Sally.
No, not at all. No. How does that feel hearing all of that back, knowing that's you and that's just a short snippet of all of your achievements? How does that make you feel?
I feel proud, and but I feel pleased to have had so many amazing opportunities to have met incredible people over my career. I've been lucky from that point of view because all of those achievements you don't do yourself. You do it through other people's enthusiasm as well. And I've been very fortunate to have amazing colleagues, friends, family that have all supported me over the years.
Yeah, but you've done the work, so it's nice to give all the other people the credit, I'm sure. And you're a very modest person, but those details are about you and you alone, and I think that's pretty remarkable. So yeah, it's very, very impressive. So how have you been? I know these last few months across the world has been pretty crazy. How have you managed to cope during lockdown?
Yeah, I mean, we are so lucky. Jerry and I, my partner and I, live in a stunningly beautiful place. We moved here just 3 years ago, and it's right on the seafront. So we are literally, sitting in bed in the morning, and Jerry very kindly brings me coffee and opens the curtains to let me come to gradually because mornings are not good for me. And we look out across the sea and look at the weather and chat about what we're going to do during the day. So I'm so blessed with both having a fabulously supportive partner, but also living in a very beautiful space.
Yeah, I know. I've seen some of the photographs and images that you've been posting on social media, and it really does look like a little piece of heaven right on your front doorstep, which is wonderful, which prompts me to make a mental note that once lockdown is over, my partner and I must come up for a visit because it looks ideal. It looks beautiful. So
Yeah, you're very
you've
welcome.
not found lockdown too difficult to sort of adjust to then, and you've managed to sort of more or less carry on as normal.
Yeah, I mean, we worked from home anyway, which so it wasn't a massive adjustment from that point of view. So moving into doing more work at home was relatively easy for us. I used to go out to a lot of meetings, but that all stopped. But the meetings continued online, the joys of technology. Zoom was a word we'd never heard of before the pandemic.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
I spent
Yeah.
many, many hours on Zoom, and also Microsoft Teams is what I use in the NHS, and that's been really useful as well. So yeah, it's carried on seamlessly, really. And the difficult thing was, as you know, we're both busy celebrants, and the celebrant work stopped. A few funerals still happened, and they were very small. Because I was so busy doing other stuff, I didn't tend to do very many funerals, but I was able to pick up a few of them again. Jerry was shielding, so she didn't go out for several months, but I did go out and do a few. But it was so stark for people, with so few people in attendance, and now it's mandatory that people wear masks, so the mourners are all staring up at me as I'm reading the ceremony to them, trying to share and support them in their grief. And they're all masked. It's so hard.
Yeah, it's a very difficult adjustment that we're all having to face, isn't it? Particularly, I would imagine in those very difficult and upsetting circumstances of a family losing someone, that's really difficult. But I'm either the optimist, I don't know about you, but I'm very hopeful that things will hopefully now start to turn around very quickly and we'll get more of a sense of a little bit of normality back, I would hope anyway, because it's been a very long and difficult process, hasn't it? This whole pandemic.
It has indeed, and I think for me, a note of caution around that, being involved with the NHS, I'm obviously very cautious and very wary because there have been so many issues and little hotspots popping up all over the country. So it's not going away, I suppose, is what I'm aware of, and we just all need
Yeah.
to be very careful and follow the guidance.
Yeah. Because also, I would imagine that just not only from the working point of view, that potentially from your own health point of view, it's been quite maybe a little bit worrying and possibly challenging because you do have a disability health condition. I'm not too sure how you phrase that. I just wondered whether you would be happy to tell us a little bit about that and what that is and how that generally affects you and how that impacts you on a daily basis.
I've lived with chronic pain since I was 14, and I developed a scoliosis when I was a teenager, which is an idiopathic scoliosis. It's not like, I know you have a scoliosis as well, Sally. That's related to, I believe, to your spina bifida. Whereas for me, they don't know why it happened. It's apparently genetic. So I was pre-programmed for that to happen, but nobody knew it would happen until it did, kind of thing. And I was undiagnosed. I wasn't very sporty or interested in physical activity, so I kind of hid behind long hair and books. So it wasn't obvious that suddenly my body was deciding to grow in a different way. So by the time I was diagnosed, I required to have spinal fusions to stabilize my spine, so I spent quite a bit of time having major surgery and in and out of hospital between the ages of 15 and 22. And I'm now stacked up with bone grafts and bits of metal and stuff. But the pain thing, being somebody of not a regular shape, and not a regular gait, means that over the years, there's aches and pains have not resolved and not gone away. So that's what I live with, which is why I'm not good in the morning, because I don't sleep very well, I can't get comfortable. But I've got used to managing it, because I can't actually remember not living with pain, because you don't really remember that much of your life when you're between 1 and 14, I think. I certainly don't. I remember bits of it, happy memories or challenging times, but you don't remember the day-to-day stuff as easily. Anyway,
No.
I'm an occupational therapist by profession, so I'm a great believer in self-management and looking at ways to support yourself with support round about you. So I'm good at asking for help when I need it, but you know, I can also know the things that I can do in life and the things that I need to do to help myself. So it's a whole kind of combination of that that I, and that's partly why I work, well, in fact, it's not partly, it is why I work from home and why I work for myself as a self-employed person, because I did get to the stage where I was finding actually doing a job where I felt the responsibility for a whole organisation and having to be in the office first thing in the morning and sometimes not getting away till late at night or having to attend evening events. I found that really difficult latterly. And, you know, I think as a woman as well, when you become menopausal, that for me was the breaking point. And I think, you know, it's not talked enough about the menopause is starting to emerge its head. But in terms of us as disabled women, what does the menopause mean for us? I think that'll be a really interesting discussion to be had at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny listening to you and listening to sort of your symptoms and your general situation and how that impacts you. It's quite uncanny just how much you and I are actually quite similar with our own physical challenges, and it's interesting. And I agree with you in terms of what you just said there, that last point about women who are menopausal having been going through very challenging times myself with all of that, and you know, with my own disability. I didn't realize this until a number of years ago, but because, like you said, of my unusual body shape. My own personal situation is that I am deteriorating on a physical level quite rapidly at the moment, and that brings its own challenges to me, about having to change my lifestyle, having to change, you know, having to transfer from being in a manual chair to a powered chair, dealing with constant chronic pain. And it's so I can completely relate to that 100%. So take me back. So you're a young lady in school or college. At that time in your life, what were your ambitions in terms of what you wanted to do from a career point of view? What was it that directed you towards where you went from that point, and, you know, and consequently the other pathways that have led you into where you are to today?
Well, when I was younger, I was always attracted to the field of health, and I kind of fell into occupational therapy because nobody else would have me.
That's not true.
And that sounds a bit odd, but it was partly because I was disabled, you know, and when I did apply for the Glasgow School of Occupational Therapy, which I have to tell you was like a good when I applied there, I didn't get an offer based on my academic achievements because they were above and beyond what was needed. I got offered on the grounds that I would have to get a consultant's letter to say that I was fit enough to do the course. And the only challenges that I faced during that course were times where I was being forced into pushing myself beyond what was reasonable as a disabled person to prove that I could be a good enough person to pass the exams. This was back in the day when the term reasonable adjustment hadn't been thought of, and you know, you had to be brave and just get on with it type thing, you know, rather than actually doing what I believe in now and what I've supported many people to work through, which is, what are the things in life that I can do by myself? What are the things in life that I need a bit of support with? And what are the things that I need other people to do for completely? And as long as I'm in the driving seat of making the decisions behind all of those things, I'm independent.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, isn't it? I've been doing a lot of soul searching in terms of my own journey in the last sort of 20, 25 years, and looking back at sort of key things that have impacted on my life, which has either gone in a positive direction or a negative direction. And I came to the conclusion that I think as people who are either born with a disability, or maybe even somebody that's had an acquired disability, you kind of come to a bit of an emotional crossroads where you know that life is never going to be normal, life is never going to be the same as everybody else, or potentially the way it used to be for you. And I think there's two ways that you can deal with that. You either crumble and you become quite isolated, and it can have a really negative impact on your own personality, or you can buckle down and work harder and develop this sense of determination of beating the odds, and you can become really, really successful. And you know, and you're a prime example of the latter, as far as I'm concerned, that you've just you've worked really hard, and you haven't got to where you are today out of luck or just being a really, really brainy person. You've had a lot of challenges in your life, and you've taken that second option and you've knuckled down and you've become the person that you are, which I think, you know, is quite inspirational. It's certainly inspirational for me, and I'm sure it will be highly inspirational to other, particularly younger disabled people out there that might be listening. So, excuse me.
The thing that I really, you know, I was fortunate enough to be involved with the introduction of disability as a concept of equality in Scotland back in the 80s. And I trained and worked with a lot of other disabled people to help, you know, professionals and other disabled people to understand the whole notion of what independence is and what equality is and what being an active citizen or an active person in your own life.
Mm.
And for me, that absolutely about separating out disability and impairment, because there are things we can do about disability and there are only limited things we can do about impairment, because as you say, that's a journey, isn't it? And we do get faced with additional challenges with impairment throughout our lives as we age. Everybody does, but when you've got a physical impairment to start off with, it is that hard thing, isn't it? Is the next time you get something happening to you, oh my goodness, is this it for the rest of my life, kind of
absolutely.
Thing. You know, it's not about catastrophizing things, it's about saying, right, okay, this is what I'm now faced with and I have to fit this in somehow into my life. But around the disability stuff, you know, about people saying you're not good enough, you're not welcome, you can't do, rather than being told what you can do or how we can break the barriers down to actually be included, is really important. Do you know what? I think it's interesting, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff around coronavirus pandemic and, you know, the fact that loads of people have had their services cut, and that is a terrible thing and something that I'm in terms of trying to address. But the counter to that as well is that more people have felt included in terms of being able to more easily access meetings or to be more included because everybody's having to work remotely. And so there are some positive lessons, I think, for disabled people in terms of you know, before the pandemic, no, you can't possibly work from home. You have to come into the office, hail, rain or shine. That's the only way you can contribute to this team, to suddenly, all right, okay, now we're all working from home. And yes, of course you can. So, you know, I think that we need to take the good lessons out of this and say that this is a much better way of flexible working for many disabled people.
Yeah.
You know, for me myself, you know, I felt much less exhausted from the less travelling I've had to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that I've discussed in the past as well. Different things that, you know, like the impact that social media and using modern technology has really come into its own really during the pandemic. You know, for example, at the weekend I was involved in the setting up and performing in a virtual pride event which was specifically geared towards disabled performers from the LGBT.
I saw a wee tiny bit of it, I didn't able to watch much, but it looked great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and before that, you know, that would never have happened. That opportunity for me to be involved in organising something and then being actively involved in it as a performer. You know, If it had just been a face-to-face, in-person kind of event, I wouldn't have had the same opportunity to have been involved in that as much as possible, because of all the barriers of actually, you know, all the physical barriers about access and all the rest of it. But the fact that we were all at our own homes and we used technology and had pre-recorded things sent in to us as well as doing things live, that whole modern technology thing really opened the doors for us. And my hope personally is that more people across all walks of life and professions that are geared towards enhancing the lives of disabled people on whatever level that is, whether that's entertainment, whether that's from an organisational point of view or whatever, will actually use that technology more to bring more disabled people into conversations. Because I personally feel that, you know, in terms of some of the main major obstacles that we face as disabled people to have a more inclusive experience within society, is that not enough agencies and organisations actually talk to one another to problem solve. They all get wrapped up in their own objectives and their workload and what they're doing. They become a little, I believe, a little bit blinkered and a little bit isolated in their own world, and they don't necessarily think about bringing other people and other agencies that at the end of the day are doing similar things to what they're trying to achieve actually into the conversation and actually making positive change. And I just hope that all of these organisations will really learn from that, from the whole pandemic thing, and actually start to make some positive changes for people like myself, you know, with disabilities. So, yeah, that was a bit heavy. I wanted to ask you something that was a little bit more lighthearted. What were your emotions when you and your wife became the first same-sex couple in Scotland to be married, when the new law was passed, knowing that you'll be forever remembered for that? What did that feel like, and how does that impact you now?
We always say that we were the first women to be married, because there was two gay men married around about the same time as us. So that was a lovely thing too. But yeah, it was, we were absolutely thrilled. We'd originally kind of downplayed it a little bit, because we already had a civil partnership and we'd had a big sort of wedding ceremony around that time, and thought, well, we didn't, you know, we could just sign the papers and that would be that. But we decided that, with the persuasion of our five offspring, that this is something we do for other people, we should do it for ourselves and celebrate. And we also thought, well, do you know what, you know, women of a certain age need to be, you know, seen, we need to be more visible.
Yeah.
And it was important to us to be able to be that role model for women of all ages, but particularly for older women, because, you know, it's important that they understood and realised that our relationships are worth celebrating, and that we've got the rights now to be married, and therefore we should. And some women have come forward, older women couples come forward who've been together for years and years and years, and asked us to marry them subsequently to that. So that was delightful. But on that actual night, the emotions were happiness, joy, excitement, and just absolute pride that Scotland has become a more equal place.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine that, you know, I can only imagine what I'm going to feel eventually when I tie the knot, and how important that's going to be. But, you know, it must be extra special knowing that, you know, that people will know you for that. You know, you will go down in record as that couple. And that must be really, really special.
Yes.
Talking about extra special, does it actually feel any extra special that a large percentage of couples that come to you to conduct their wedding ceremonies are from the LGBTQ plus community? Does that feel extra important to you, that a large percentage of people that come to you are actually from the community?
Yeah, we absolutely love that. It's been a great honour, and I think because we know that we are so tuned into the equality agenda, it's, you know, we know that we're then going to absolutely 100% be there around the needs of our community. So that's why it feels such an important thing to be doing and for us to be promoting. We love it. Obviously, we marry a lot of straight couples too. I'm fall in love with each and every one of them. But it is an additional bonus when we get to marry some LGBTQI people.
Yeah, I can imagine. What can you talk a little bit, if you've got any things in mind that spring to mind, what have been some of your own personal experiences of challenges to you being able to be actively involved in the community, and what are the sort of the more common barriers that you've seen over the years that have caused difficulty for you to actually be a part of the community?
Actually, when I came out, I was in my 30s, so that would be in the late 90s. And one of the barriers I did experience was a number of women being challenging towards me or not accepting me as a proper lesbian because I had been married to a man in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that I had children and, you know, was still co-parenting those children with their dad, which, you know, for me, that was, you know, when you become a mother, you have to prioritize the emotional and physical well-being of your children, come what may. And that to me was important and continues to be important, even though they're now young adults. Well, not that young, actually, scarily. Jillian, the baby is 28 at the end of this year.
Right.
Anyway, it was so that was a bit difficult, and also the sort of the whole issue around the disability community not being that enthusiastic about me coming out as a lesbian either. So I felt a wee bit kind of in no women's land for a while. That was a bit tricky.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Do you get many people with disabilities from the community coming to you with issues and problems and asking your advice to sort of problem solve and get over issues? Do they come to you for guidance generally, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm working with families and couples, you know, if people in those families have impairments or diagnoses of long-term conditions or whatever, quite often people will ask for a bit of guidance and where do they go to and who's the best person to talk to or how do I manage and all of that kind of stuff. And also Jenny, my partner, has type 2 diabetes that she manages with diet and exercise, so quite often people are interested to speak to us about that too. So we're quite open about the approaches we take to our life, so that people feel they can come and ask us questions if they want to. But we wouldn't impose that on MD, obviously, but it's good.
That's really important. That's brilliant. So a bit of a heavier question now. In your opinion, what should be the collective focus, do you think, to create a more inclusive world for people with disabilities in the LGBTQ+ community? Do you see a way that important players could actually come together and start to actually make some of the positive changes that we need? What are your sort of thoughts on that?
Jings. You don't ask easy questions, do you, Sal?
Only because I know you can handle it.
I mean, there's always going to be work to be done in the equalities field, isn't there? Because it's human nature not to understand something that's different from yourself. And, you know, very often people just float along in their own little bubble and they don't realise that perhaps they're excluding or, you know, not being inclusive, however, I mean, which side of the coin you might want to look at. That, you know, I think that the world that actually says we can be who we are without having to be labelled, and also to be able to have that sort of fluidity of acceptance of who we are over our lifespan would just be amazing. You know, people are still, sometimes people are still very fascinated by the fact that, you know, I was married to a man in the past, and then I came out as a lesbian, and they really want to know, you know, details of what, you know, why did I change and all that kind of stuff. And it's not necessarily about, it's about changing. It's just about you evolving as to who you are, and also finally being able to listen to the inner voices of who you are as a person. And that doesn't come easily.
No, I keep coming back, personally, I keep coming back to that whole thing of being able to move forward with this to create a better culture and an environment for people like us would be the two major things, I think, is communication to the people out there, the
Course.
wider world, and education. For me, I think, you know, that there needs to be a much more bigger emphasis on both those things, to make the wider world appreciate what the challenges are. Because in terms of physical barriers, a lot of the actual physical barriers that we faced, for example, about getting into buildings and things like that, could actually be easily solved if the people in the position to make those changes, those managers, those event organizers, etc., just had a little bit more education towards what the challenges are, and have a more open dialogue with people from their community that are faced with these challenges. But I get the perception that a lot of the barriers go up with these organizations because they think, oh, well, we need money to make X, Y, and Z more accessible, and we haven't got it. So that, in a lot of cases, I've found that's where the conversation ends, and I think that's really, really sad. So I personally think an awful lot more education needs to be in place to actually make people aware of what the changes are that we actually need. But
Yeah, I mean,
that's just my personal view.
no, but I think it's a lot of it boils down to attitude, doesn't it? Because you know, if people don't think, or they don't care, or they don't see us as worthwhile, or making an effort as worthwhile, that's the problem. So if you know, if you can tackle attitudes, you know, the whole world can turn around in a sixpence, literally. Because you know, there are always solutions to access, or to improving how we go around that. And you know, it actually being included from a thought point of view goes a long way, doesn't it? You
It
know,
does.
because
Yeah.
rather than just being excluded and people don't care.
Exactly. On that note, in terms of making adaptions and things like that, do you, in your honest opinion, do you think that the Equalities Law has been effective enough in making any difference to the community? And if so, if not, what do you think needs to change about that?
Well, because I've been around the block since the 80s in this field, I have seen a massive difference, because things used to be really bad. So we have progressed hugely, but you know, we're not there yet. I think that's the thing. And for disabled people, we are the only group of people under legislation where actually it's lawful to discriminate against us because of this notion of reasonableness. So the interpretation of what's reasonable is always going to be with a person. It's going to differ across different parts of the country and different departments, different employers. So you know, we need to do something about that. And I don't necessarily have the right answer. You know, having been somebody who's been on the other side of the fence as somebody, as a chief exec who have been employing people, I know how challenging that can be to make those reasonable adjustments. And sometimes they don't work out for whatever reason. But the fact that we can be limited by that, I think is potentially problematic. I think new building legislation really helps. You know, I think that definitely has made a big improvement in terms of of access. But obviously we live in a country with a lot of older and outdated properties, so that, you know, physical access becomes a challenge there. But as I say, attitude, make Well, that's so if your building's inaccessible, well, you then have the mindset of, well, if we're having a meeting that includes is going to include disabled people, we need to move from this inaccessible environment to a different environment so that we can include them. And that's what I was meaning earlier when I was saying, a bit more of us being included, because actually you can then say, well, let's do it online for everyone. Let's have it on a Zoom platform, because that means that everybody's there on the same basis.
I mean, I agree with you. And I know I feel from my own personal experiences in life that there are a lot of loopholes and a lot of failings within the Equalities Act. Who do you think we need to approach, and how do we go about as a collective community approaching the right people to actually make a change and actually modernize and enforce the Equalities Act more effectively? Because from my experience, there's so much red tape, it's so difficult to actually state a case against something that you've been discriminated against. It's a really lengthy process and can be quite expensive in terms of, employing a legal team, and quite frankly, it's exhausting for any disabled person, the prospect of having to go through that. We have enough to deal with in our lives, without the added pressure of that, which means that I'm sure that there are thousands of cases out there that aren't being chased up, and organizations and things that are getting away with not being inclusive. So how do we go about lobbying for change in terms of that Equalities Act? Who do we speak to, and how do we behave? How do we move forward to actually make the powers that be realize that as far as I'm concerned, the Equalities Act is flawed, and it needs changing?
We need to win the hearts and minds of a number of people, so it needs to be a multifactorial approach, really, doesn't it? Through central government, local government, but also political parties as well, because each of them will have a disability spokesperson. And I know that I'm certainly about to have a conversation with the disability spokesperson for the SNP at Westminster. So, just taking those kind of opportunities to challenge and to speak to people and see that influence percolating through central local government, and from there through to the third and private sector. Private sector is probably the most challenging to reach in terms of their approach, because they're all disparate and don't come under particular ethos in the way that third sector and public sector organisations do.
Yeah, so basically, if more individuals were maybe able to send a letter or an email to their local MP expressing their challenges and what they've faced in terms of the Equalities Act failing them and giving examples, the more people that do that, which, when you look at actually the difference between just doing that and going through the process of actually trying to hold somebody accountable and all of the work that involves, that's actually less challenging to
There's
do.
also the collective thing, though, about there's disabled people's organisations all over the country, that would come under the umbrella of disability rights. And I think they're an important group of organisations. Certainly, as chair of the Independent Living Fund, we constantly are in communication with our disabled people's organisations up here in Scotland, because they have a voice of their local community or their local sort of interest group. And they're constantly gathering those views, and also supporting people to understand what their rights are, because you can't challenge your rights if you don't actually know what they are. And a lot of disabled people are not like you and I chatting away on a Wednesday afternoon about the rights and wrongs of the world. They're just getting on with their lives and being ordinary people. And one of the I want to achieve through things like my involvement with the Independent Living Fund are to say we want people to be able to have ordinary lives despite the extraordinary circumstances they find themselves in. So why should they be political? Why should they be doing all that kind of stuff? It isn't fair, you know. Your energy should be focusing on having the life that you want to lead.
Absolutely.
A few of us do want to fly that flag, so those of us that do should take on that responsibility for making sure that we're individually standing up for rights, but also that we're, you know, doing that through a process of a combined voice, because that carries with it a history of political change. It carries with it a currency of recent people that are saying what their truth is and what their life is. So I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, definitely. It's difficult, isn't it? And I feel quite strongly about what I feel is wrong, certainly, with the Equalities Act, and, you know, and that it's unfair, that it when it comes down to the individual, it puts far more pressure on you to actually see it through and find the energy to actually get a victory with the case. It's very demanding, and it's, you know, and life is hard enough, and, you know, that's why I feel that there needs to be more of an emphasis and a more awareness within the community as a whole of what the problems are, because, you know, allies and all the rest of it, if we go more public and make our voices heard in terms of what our challenges are, the wider community will become more aware of that, and I would hope that would create a better dialogue between us and the rest of the communities. And you know, that there's a lot to be said for allies, because, you know, you never know the strength and the skills of other individuals out there that might be able to pass on their wisdom and their enthusiasm and their energy to jump on board with us, if you like, and make those changes. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more of a society thing that, you know, more people need to get on board. And I certainly think that, you know, the Equalities Act needs to be easier to access and go down that route. Definitely, that's my opinion. Right, okay. I'm going to wrap things up now, because I know you're a very busy lady and you've got things to do this afternoon, so I don't want to keep you for too long. I just wanted to ask you one final little question and ask you, what do you like to do to relax? What are your hobbies? What do you like to do in your spare social time? What do you do for fun?
I like a number of things. I really, really like food and cooking.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I've really missed as a lockdown thing. It has been eating out, because I like fine dining and I like good wine, and I really enjoy that. So, however, I have done loads of cooking since we've been off and made some amazing food and really enjoyed that, and managed to perfect my sourdough bread, which is very exciting, because you can put sourdough in the fridge, and then I've discovered that's bread that I can do because it doesn't involve kneading, which I find too difficult.
Right, yeah.
So you just fold it. So that's been, and watch it grow. So that's been fun.
That's a good.
But I also, you know, I have to confess, as you can take a girl out of occupational therapy in terms of providing that service, because that's obviously not what I've done. I've done that for a long time. It was a route to through my career, but I've not been a practicing OT since 1990 something. Anyway. I do love craft work, so I do all sorts of knitting and sewing projects and felting and crochet and painting stones and just generally fiddling about. So I enjoy that. And I actually have managed to finish a lot of things, because I'm terrible at starting lots of things and then not finishing them. So I managed during lockdown to finish a number of things. But then there's, you know, we've got animals. I love my animals, and, you know, we've got two dogs and a cat. I'm very lucky that Jenny does the vast majority of the walking. I can go for a very short toddle along the front when I'm feeling up to it, but she That's good. We got a wee lockdown pussycat in the delivered to us before we settled in big time. So that's good fun. That soothes me, which is great.
I don't living in your house, and I had access to those fantastic views every day. That would fulfill me a great deal. You must take a lot of pleasure of being able to sit there and just watch that view.
It does.
And that must be good for your
it
own
does.
Mental health, I would imagine, because it's very relaxing.
It's hugely, Sally. And you know, I like doing a bit of meditation, and I'll sit looking out at the view and just let it take me to that meditative place. So as I say, we're so lucky with where we are.
As soon as lockdown's over, I think my partner and I need to come and have a visit, because it sounds wonderful.
Absolutely. And we've got access now, so there you go.
Oh, brilliant. Right. We'll have to follow up on that one. Listen, I'm gonna let you go now, because you know, I know you've got things to do this afternoon. You're a very busy lady. But I really appreciate you spending the time chatting with me today. It's been very inspirational, and I'm sure the listeners will agree with me on that. You're an amazing lady, and I personally feel very honoured and very lucky to be a friend of yours and Jerry's. I think my life is a much better place knowing that you're in my life, and so thank you for being amazing, and thank you for being you.
Thank you very much, Sally. You're too kind, and love to you, Natalie, and I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, let's see each other soon, hopefully. Thank you very much, and take care of yourself, and I'll speak to you very soon.
Bye for now.
Take
Thanks
care.
For having me.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye. Hi, this is Sally from Rainbow Warrior, the podcast. Just want to say thanks for listening, and if you enjoyed the podcast, please press subscribe so you can find out when the next episode is coming your way, and show me some love on Spotify. Thanks very much.